drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
Good morning and welcome on in. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Happy U.S. Open Saturday to everyone out there. Moving day officially underway after some weather came in to Oakmont last night. Tyler Rocky alongside Mike Gilligan, and pleased to be joined in studio today by Casey Richards as well from the CDGA. Good morning to you all, and boy, this has been a wild U.S. Open, to say the least. The leaderboard, very strange, but you could kind of tell based off of the way that the first couple of days have shook out that, hey, this is going to be a little bit of a weird one just based off of the course conditions. But, Mike, you are currently at home right now, but I'm sure you're taking in all the action taking place out at Oakmont.
I am, Tyler, and good morning, Casey and Tyler and everybody in Chicago. And, yeah, happy U.S. Open Masters Week, or Masters U.S. Open Week, and happy Father's Day to everybody tomorrow. One of the best weeks aside of the Masters, I think, is this week, and it's our nation's Open, and it is so, so unpredictable. And as I started looking at some of the research and who tends to jump up leaderboards and how people come up and go down and all of that, the history of this thing is pretty amazing, because if you consider Oakmont in history, the person that has finished in second place after day one is generally the winner. And that means Thurston Lawrence, who could be our potential winner. Mm-hmm. And that's what the U.S. Open will breed. People that we've never heard of or followed. And they'll have that moment up at the leaderboard. And I think we're seeing some of that now. And when I look at the leaderboard and I see that Sam Burns and J.J. Spahn and Victor Hovland are 1, 2, and 3, I would add T4, Oakmont, the weather. And they have been moving up. And I think by the end of this thing, Oakmont's going to be number one, and then the champion will be number two. Yeah. Because I think this golf course is going to be turned up in a way. Mr. Bodenhammer at the USGA, they looked the first 2 days of this thing. Is the agronomy team. It's a true balancing act to see where the golf course is, but now they're going to get serious, and I think we are going to see some real carnage today.
Yeah, Mike, you mentioned Lawrence. Interesting day for him. He had to come back basically at the break of dawn to finish his round hole, his par putt from his 18th hole of the second round, and now he's got to wait until around 3 o'clock Eastern time to play his third round. So we'll see how he handles that. And then, yeah, obviously, like you said, the big wild card is the weather. You know, in theory, at most events, you know, the players, I think, welcome rain in terms of how it softens the greens and softens the conditions. But to your point, Mike, I think it'll create a lot of interesting scenarios out there on the course today, on moving day.
Yeah, so it's going to be, like you mentioned, Casey, the weather is going to certainly play a factor today. And we'll check in at Oakmont at 10 o'clock. PJ Clark from the Fried Egg will join us, and we'll also talk with Dennis Walters, World Golf Hall of Fame member, who you were with earlier this week, Mike, and you saw him jar an ace. So
yeah, we did. It was the most amazing thing. We go out to CDGA Member Day at Strawberry Creek, and you know, we're introducing Dennis to all the foursomes, and he's hitting shots with everybody. Well, the second group came through, and he hit the shot, and I said, you know, Dennis, that looks pretty good, because he almost made a hole-in-one in practice. And so I turned around, and I'm talking to the other groups that are coming up, and we had a little bit of a bunch on our tee box, and we were a little slow getting out of the blocks, if you will. And all of a sudden, the group comes back with the cart, and I'm going, what are you doing? Did you forget a club? I mean, we got to get this thing moving, folks. He goes, no. And he's holding the ball in his hand as he's driving down the cart path. We picked this out of the hole. And I said, no way, come on. and the person that teed it up for Charlie confirmed that was the exact ball because it had a CDGA logo on it. And so that was his fifth hole-in-one.
Wow.
From a seated cart position. That's incredible.
Insane. Absolutely insane. So, by the way, this segment brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course. As we look at this U.S. Open leaderboard, Sam Burns at 3-under. He's one of only three guys right now currently sitting under par at the moment. It's Burns, it's J.J. Spaun, it's Victor Hovland. When I look at this top 11 right now, it's names that you could see hovering inside of a top 10 at a major championship. Pretty much every single one of them. You could see being inside the top 10 of a major championship. It's more the names that aren't there that I think has really taken over this U.S. Open leaderboard. You've had so-so starts for guys like Scottie Scheffler and Colin Morikawa and John Rahm and particularly Rory McIlroy, too, who has fallen way back. Xander Schauffele, those guys barely tucked their way inside the cut line. And then some of the guys that didn't make it. No Ludvig Åberg to see the weekend. No Bryson DeChambeau to see the weekend. It's been a very weird turn. Justin Thomas, boy, did he have an adventure on the greens yesterday.
Oh.
He was putting for birdie and ended with double. But yeah, no, it's just been a very strange leaderboard so far at the U.S. Open. You can see these names being in the thick of things, but it feels like, at least at the top of the top, it's really missing the superstar needle-moving power.
Yeah, I mean, as you scroll through the leaderboard on the USGA site here, they do a good job of indicating past champions with a little trophy icon.
Yep.
And you don't see too many of those at the top. I mean, there's Brooks Koepka. He's tied for eighth. He struggled a little bit yesterday after a really solid first round, but obviously he's always going to be a factor when he's in contention. You know, John Rahm is tied for 23rd down there with Scotty. So, yeah, to your point, I mean, I think this is a real opportunity this weekend for somebody to make their mark and claim that U.S. Open title and perhaps a first major championship. And to me, obviously, there's the physical aspect. You need to have the game to compete here. But it's as much of a mental, I think, grind. And who can just stay focused? Who can shake off those bad breaks they may get, those unfortunate lies they may encounter, to just kind of stick with their process and grind through it, especially on a day as we look at the TV now, as the green hovers over Oakmont. So
yeah, on that weather radar. To your point too about the past champions, I just did a quick little look. You have five past champions that made the cut, six that missed it. Yep. So it doesn't matter your experience level, even at this course. It's going to provide some challenges. And you could say, oh, well, there's probably some like old washed up guys who didn't make it. Really, the only guy who you're like, oh, that guy I could see not making the cut, Dustin Johnson, who's just, his game's completely fallen off. And even for a moment in time, it looked like he was going to be all right. But he goes 5 over both days, 10 over for the tournament. He misses the cut. They're already off and running right now. A handful of groups on the course. Nobody in the red so far for the day, albeit early, only a couple of holes in. Some notable names already out there right now. Hideki Matsuyama, he's 1 over through one. Matthew Fitzpatrick is even through two, and Brian Harman even through three. So we'll keep you up to date on everything that's taken place out there. But to you guys, what would you say is the biggest surprise through the first two rounds?
I think, you know, the biggest surprise is, I think, going back to a lot of the biggest names, especially the Brysons of the world, exiting early and going home early. And I think a lot of the big stars, I mean, while it's surprising, it kind of isn't, just because U.S. Opens, you know, shuffle the deck in a way that the outcome can be just about anything. You know, you could find people that we've never heard of, such as, you know, your Thurston Lawrences. But I do think, you know, the performance that Sam Burns put on yesterday was really, really good. And the reason I say this is because he's 3 under right now, and there's only three people under par. And I guess I'm surprised a little bit about how many people were under par at the very beginning on Thursday. At one point, there were 21 people that were subpar. But after round two, there was only six. And so, or three now. And so now, with the golf course kind of winning, it's setting just like the USGA wants. And in 2020, they at Wingfoot, it went from 21 to 6 to 3, and then one person, it was Bryson, who won. And that's the USGA's formula. They would like to see the winner, be it Sam Burns or whomever, one person under par or even, and the rest of the field over par. And that, I think, in the eyes of the USGA, would be a perfect U.S. Open. Now, how does that relate back to these guys? Patience. Fairway finders. They have to find the fairway. And the only saving grace, in my opinion, that this weather helps them today is it actually makes the fairways at Oakmont much bigger for them, because Pittsburgh is a lot like San Francisco, and San Francisco has Olympic. And Olympic and Oakmont are very much alike in the way that the fairways run. And you may hit the fairway, but you probably will end up in the rough if you don't hit it in the right spot in the fairway. So these fairways are not flat, so they're not forgiving, and they'll run. And if they get these fairways running quick, then the fairways play much more narrow. So it's going to be interesting today who can find the fairway. And I think that's going to translate as to who's going to be at the top of the leaderboard at the end of the day.
Yeah, to your point, Mike, of the top 15 guys in fairway percentage, 13 of them made the cut. So yeah. It just kind of, or I should say 12 of them made the cut. So 80% there. If you were finding fairways at a pretty consistent clip, about two out of every three, you were in a pretty good spot. And you look at some of the guys who were some of the best at it. J.J. Spawn is up there. Adam Scott, Siwoo Kim, Emiliano Grillo, like those were the guys who really helped themselves out in this event just because their driving accuracy was as good as it was this week so far.
Yeah, and Mike, you mentioned Sam Burns. I mean, what a round yesterday, a 65. Strokes gained 9.78 in this round, which just magnifies how much better he was than the rest of the field. And if you compare that to past major championship rounds, you have to go back to 2019 at Bethpage Black and Brooks Koepka with a great round there. So phenomenal play from him. And really, I know he lost that playoff at the RBC Canadian last week. His wedge play and his putting kind of let him down. But he did shoot a 62 in that final round. And when you watched them play that 18th hole over and over and over again, off the tee, he put it in the exact same spot every single time. It was around the greens that he got a little shaky. So it's not exactly a surprise that his game and his swing is in really good form right now. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him continue to play well. He's obviously always been a phenomenal putter, if not the best putter on tour. And his full tee to green game has been very strong as well.
For sure. I think one of the other things too, if you aren't driving well in this event, it means you're putting very well. And I think one of the great cases of that is what Cameron Young's been doing. He's got currently a driving accuracy sub 30%. For context, most of the guys that are doing very well, I mentioned that number earlier, are hitting about 66% of their fairways. He is sub 30, but his strokes gained putting for the tournament so far is almost 3. And he's by far and away ahead of the rest of the pack. And if you can putt on these greens, it kind of felt like this tournament was going to be determined by two things: how well you could find your fairways and how well you could putt. And whoever can blend that the best is probably who's going to end up winning. And one guy who's doing it at a very high clip right now is someone who's hovered around and is just kind of waiting for his breakthrough. It might be J.J. Spawn, who is currently fourth right now in strokes gained putting and is currently sixth in fairway accuracy right now. So look for J.J. Spawn, a guy who he was in that playoff against Rory McIlroy at the Players earlier this year, and you really can't ask for a more daunting playoff. I think he actually probably could have won it if they played it Sunday. But you have to sleep on, I got to go three-hole aggregate against Rory McIlroy the next day. You're probably going to end up finding your way into the water, which is exactly what he did.
Yeah, obviously that's incredibly valuable experience for him to get, you know, in that playoff, and he's clearly been able to build off of that, where some players may have been devastated about coming so close and just missing out. He's been able to build upon that, have a solid season, and obviously put himself in a good spot heading into the weekend here at the U.S. Open, Mike.
Yeah, and I mean, to both of your guys' points, if you find the fairway, then you're setting up the strokes gained on the approach as well as the putting. And if you look at J.J. Spawn after day one, he made up 4 shots in putting alone. So you have to be over-excelling in one of these categories to take advantage of Oakmont. You can't just go through any of these categories just average and expect to have a above average score. This golf course will penalize you in ways you can't even imagine. And, you know, to the point I think Casey made about Sam Burns being one of the best putters on tour, you know, he picked up three shots just putting yesterday, but he also picked up more shots on the strokes gained in terms of his approach. So when you couple those two things together and you're finding fairways, that's the only way you can slay the monster they call Oakmont.
312-332-3776. If you want to join us here on the CDGA Golf Show, what have you made of the U.S. Open? And when we come back, I want to discuss, has the course been too hard? Has it been too unfair? And have you liked to see a lot of these guys, especially some of the traditional powers in the sport, struggle as much as they have so far in this tournament? We'll do all that and more when we come back. This segment's been brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
A segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. We've got our first birdie roll of the day. Belongs to Brian Harman, who has moved his way to six over. It's been a challenge out there. Casey, you were just saying to me during the break, you know, you look at the rough, and the rough has been all the story of what this tournament is. And that first cut of rough out there looks like what you would be hitting at any other golf course in America right now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And, you know, while we were at break, they showed a guy on the telecast walking around with just a rake that you would use in your backyard, kind of fluffing it up, making sure that it's in prime position. But I don't know, it's been an interesting discourse of whether or not people, to your point before the break, kind of enjoy seeing this type of golf where the rough doesn't really leave you with much of an option, right? You don't really have a choice to try to go for the green. You kind of just have to lash it out. But I don't know. I've appreciated the fact that these guys are being forced to hit the types of shots that they might not normally encounter or practice. And I think that's why it leads to a lot of this, you know, variability. So many of the courses they play are set up similarly week in, week out, to where they know what they're going to kind of encounter. And obviously they knew coming into this event that the course was going to be challenging and the rough was going to be really long, but you know, there's not really any way to prepare for that other than playing the course. So I don't know. I've appreciated them seeing to be confronted with situations that they don't normally see. And we've seen guys handle it better than others. That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoy this, but in small doses. I wouldn't want to see a constant stream of this throughout the year. I think it's appropriate for a one time to really make the conditions teeter on the edge of going crazy and not losing the golf course. But that's what the USGA is all about. They push the venue to the brink. And there's been a lot of clubs that have not been real happy with the USGA after they leave town when they stress the greens out to the point where they lost them. And that's happened at some of the venues in the past because, again, you can't control what Mother Nature does. And if you run into a Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the weather gets just unbelievably hot and they are trying to keep these greens short and tight, that's how they get burnt out. And, you know, the only part of this that the USGA can't control is the amount of moisture that goes down by Mother Nature. They can control it artificially, and I don't think they put a drop of water down between Thursday night and Friday morning because they got a good idea of where that course sits. And if you go back to 1998 when the U.S. Open was at Olympic and it was a Friday, they put a hole location on 18 and it became goofy golf. And it was one of the most embarrassing things for the USGA when Payne Stewart would putt it up and it would come back down to him. He putt it up and it came back down to him. And that left a real black eye on the USGA. So they're quite sensitive about where this course needs to be, and they will push it right to the brink. But I think John Bodenhammer does a great job in setting up the course to come out in different layers. And Thursday's always the easiest. Friday, they twisted a little bit harder, but come the weekend, they want to put the very best in the world under the sternest test of the year, and that's what we're going to happen, providing Mother Nature doesn't make the conditions go the other way and make it obviously easier. But I think they are going to have their hands full. They're going to have packed crowds. There's going to be a lot on the line. You know, so from a mental perspective, it's a grind, but it's also a grind to understand that bogey this weekend could be a very good score in certain situations and certain holes. And that is the thing as a fan that we can't get past. We're always about birdies and pars, but under this 1 week, bogey could be considered a very good score.
I mean, yeah, how many times have you seen guys make miraculous putts to save bogey this week? I mean, how many times do you see that it flashes up there? You see a guy, he's putting for bogey, he's got 15 feet to cover.
Into that point, Adam Scott showed resilience. I watched his first handful of holes out of the box, and I thought he was going to be 10 over. But guess what? He hung in there. And look where he is now. So it's that perseverance, it's that patience, and not feeling like under a regular tour event, I'm falling way behind. These guys must be making birdies left and right. No, we're all struggling together, but it is a calibration that is so hard to get used to once a year.
Adam Scott, the only guy to not have an over par round so far, 270. So yeah, he's in good position, tied with Ben Griffin, another guy that we haven't really talked about yet, who has put together a very solid season. He's won twice, and this is his first U.S. Open, which is crazy to think. It's not too often you see a guy making his U.S. Open debut already as a multi-time PGA Tour winner. But
moment it is for him.
exactly. And obviously, you know, big Ryder Cup implications for him. You know, probably expect to see him make his debut on that scene later this year, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because, Mike, you're talking about how Thursday is usually the easy day, and then it gets progressively harder as you go. Did you guys see the nickname that was floating around after there was a lot of subpar rounds, especially early in the morning on Thursday? Everyone was saying, oh, this is Jokemont. And like, oh, maybe the members there aren't as good as everyone else across the country. And now the course is showing its teeth. I haven't seen a lot of Jokemont floating around Twitter lately, based off of what we've seen and how the course reared its head yesterday. And just some of the guys that you saw go out there and shoot 5 over, 6 over, 7 over. And I think part of what's warped the perception, too, is the fact that it is a par 70 course as well, where, like, you see a 74 and you think, well, that's only 2 over. No, it's actually 4 over, and it's really changed and warped a lot of these scores that we've seen through the first 2 days. I want to go out to Chris. He's in Coal City talking about the challenge of what this course. Have you liked the challenge of seeing a lot of these high caliber players struggle? 312-332-3776. Chris is in Coal City. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, what's up, guys? I would say that I'm maybe average, slightly above, viewer, and I've just been locked in. You know, not many times you can see where I really do think the cut line, everyone can get into the top 10, and, you know, 15 to 20 guys have a chance of really winning this thing. So I've definitely been locked in, and you said it right before. I think Adam Scott's the guy that's going to make it happen.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Chris. Adam Scott's not a bad shout right there. Because, like Casey mentioned, he's the only guy who has not played an over par round. And one of the things that, Mike, you and I know we like to do on this show is look at the guys who are being buoyed by one round and look at the guys who have just kind of been steady throughout. And when you look at the guys who have been steady, it's guys like Adam Scott, it's Ben Griffin. Victor Perez has been steady, but remember, he's got that ace in there as well, which really changes how you see some of these scores. Russell Henley, another one of those guys, too. Emiliano Grillo's been pretty rock solid, too, given what the course is. And then you've got guys like Sam Burns, who he's got a 2 over, but he's also got a 5 under. J.J. Spaulding, he's got a 4 under and a 2 over. So when you look at the variance between the rounds, that's usually what I look for. And if you're looking for someone who's sort of in the winner's circle of guys, like, I would look for someone like an Adam Scott. I think that's a good look there. Russell Henley's not a bad one either. And Ben Griffin, like, those are the guys who certainly could be the ones coming away with this thing when it's all said and done. Just because if you play a consistent style of golf in this tournament, at this course, and especially given what the field's shown so far, you're probably in this thing.
What I like to look at, too, is how much a putter is carrying a guy, too. Because from my perspective, that's kind of the skill and the aspect that can have the most variability from round to round, for better or for worse. So if you look at some of the, you know, strokes gain stats and who are the guys who are doing the bulk of their legwork ball striking wise, Victor Hovland, he's in third. He's actually losing strokes to the field on putting and has still been able to perform so well so far. So if he can hold out a few putts, maybe look for him to make a move. Adam Scott, he's, you know, barely gaining strokes. And again, obviously always been a really great ball striker, and it's always been the putter that is, you know, kind of been the wild card for him, but maybe another data point for him that, that he can pick up some strokes moving forward. So, you know, conversely, as we talked about earlier, JJ Spahn, he's had a extremely hot putter so far. Russell Henley, Griot. So yeah, I mean, obviously sometimes you feel it for the whole weekend, but you know, to me, there's maybe a little more external circumstances and luck involved with extremes of putting on one way or the other.
And you know, guys, I like what Chris said, you know, because he did say that anyone with like 7 or 8 shots, almost anyone that's made the cut still has a chance, because this golf course can be so volatile at certain points. So a 7-shot lead is not the same when you're playing the Barracuda Open. If you're 7 shots ahead in the Barracuda Open, you are going to run away from the field. Scottie Scheffler is very much in this, folks.
Have you seen odds, Mike?
Yeah.
They're incredible. He's 8-1, and he's 7 strokes off. It's almost the market has completely lost the plot when it comes to pricing out Scottie Scheffler at this point. And it's like he's in a group of a bunch of guys who are all very good golfers. Like, John Rahm's won this thing before. Colin Morikawa is a major winner
multiple times,
and John Rahm is 25-1 right now. Colin Morikawa is 35-1 right now. Scottie Scheffler is in the same, has the same score as both of those guys, and has yet to post a score under par for the tournament. And he is 8-1. And you know what? I don't blame him.
I know, because you know why? Because today the fairways might be soft, and who could be the best fairway finder? It could be Scotty. He's the one guy that I think could actually shoot a good score today, better than anybody else, and truly vault himself up in that leaderboard. And if he's anywhere within, say, 3 or 4 shots going into tomorrow, wow, I'd love to see what his odds are going to be then come tomorrow.
He'll probably be the favorite.
Exactly. And but I'll tell you, going back to what you two said and the consistency factor of Adam Scott, I'll add in the fact that he's a Masters, a major winner. He has played golf all over the world in some of the biggest and most pressure-packed situations. I think his game has matured in a way, and he mentally, I was so impressed how he held it together early on Thursday, because I thought, I even said it in the office to John Petracca next door. I go, Adam Scott's going home early. He looks like he's all out of sorts. He came back, and I can't believe it. And that is some of the tenacity, some of that tenaciousness that you just can't give up in a U.S. Open week, because anything can happen.
It's funny, too, because not all rounds of par golf are created equal. He had a very adventurous Thursday, like you were alluding to, Mike, and then it was just kind of tame on Friday. I mean, it was not a lot of shapes on the card, just play par, a couple bogeys, couple birdies, and then we'll go in with an even 70. And it's really what has allowed him to thrive. And as you look at it, especially how we've seen the first 2 days go, I'm pretty convinced the winner is going to be even or worse.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we were talking about Scotty. Some interesting clips circulating yesterday of him on the range after his round, working with his swing coach, visibly, you know, frustrated, trying to lock in, following a couple, by his standards, you know, subpar rounds. So it'll be interesting to see if that range session after the round, you know, pays dividends today. Tyler, you mentioned Cameron Young earlier. They're playing together, you know, today. So that would be
be some chaos.
Yeah, if I were outside at Oakmont, that would be a twosome
good follow group.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, let's go through some of the guys that we think can win this thing that maybe are of more of the long shot variety, based on where they are right now on the leaderboard. because I agree with what Chris and Cole City said earlier and what you guys have echoed. This thing is wide open right now. There are a lot of names that could really make a run at this thing and end up winning it. So we'll discuss all that when we come back. This segment's been brought to you by Golf Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up north Michigan golf without the drive. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, and we're joined by Casey Richards from the CDGA with us here in studio, as he does what usually once a month, joins us to talk about what's going on with the magazine, the Senior Managing Director of Communications. But we are here for U.S. Open Moving Day, and the field is wide open right now. Any way you slice it, you've got nobody with a score better than 3 under right now. 10 strokes separated the leader of this tournament from the last guy who made the cut entering today. And as you look at it, a lot of the best players are kind of bunched up in the middle right now, kind of in that range of top 12 to top like 45. Any of those guys, I think, are live to win this thing still. You got to go out and have a spectacular day today. And the course has been playing a little bit difficult today so far. I mean, just ask Hideki Matsuyama, who's already 3 over through three. He's one of the best players who just got inside that cut line there. But you look at the way that this thing could shake out today, there's a lot of interesting stats that you could look at. A lot of guys who maybe could get some putter regression, which you've alluded to, Casey, about how that can be one of the most, like one of the biggest swings that you could see in a guy's round. The two guys that I look at that I think could make a little bit of a run today, I look at Jon Rahm and Colin Morikawa, who right now are currently 5th and 6th on strokes gained tee to green in the tournament so far, and their putting has been what's doomed them. They are both -1.5 strokes gained putting right now. If you could get some of that regression to go the other way, maybe you find yourself with a 3 under round today, and all of a sudden you're 1 over heading into tomorrow, and I would guess 1 over puts you into one of the final 3 or 4 pairings of the day.
Yeah, with Rahm, obviously the big question with him is always kind of the mindset, right?
Yeah.
And
has this course tested between the years.
Right. And interesting Q&A that the Fried Egg put on their Twitter account. I know we'll talk with PJ in a little bit. But the question posed to Rahm was, can you put the score in perspective given how tough the course is? His answer, honestly, I'm too annoyed and too mad right now to think about any perspective. Very frustrated. Very few rounds of golf I played in my life where I think I hit good putts and they didn't sniff the hole. So it's frustrating. So acknowledging that his putting was not good enough yesterday, but, you know, we'll see if he's able to build on that, you know, quote unquote frustration to do a little different, or as we've seen can be the case with him sometimes, is it just going to kind of spiral and is he going to let his emotions get the best of him? So definitely a wild card, I think, for the weekend.
You know, guys, I look at scores sometimes where they had that first bad round and then they kind of come back, because is that now the trend? Have they sort of figured out Oakmont, you know, figured out their weak spot on Thursday to make the improvement and the adjustment for Friday, and now they're set for the weekend? And when I look at the leaderboard, I look at Jonathan Vegas and Ryan Fox. Ryan had a heck of a week last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, a guy like that, you win the Canadian Open, it's real simple. You know, you're going into the U.S. Open, Oakmont, it's going to be really, really hard. And, you know, you're relieved. You're probably not going to make the cut. Well, he did, and he's doing pretty well. So I think he's on a bit of a run himself. But the other one I'd keep an eye on is Maverick McNealy. Mm-hmm. He is perhaps one of the better putters on tour, and he made a nice improvement yesterday as well. So, you know, but to your point, Tyler, it is so wide open, and one of two things are going to happen. I don't think people are really going to hover where they are. They're either going to go up or they're going to go down. And I think the majority of them are going to be adding shots to their score today. It's just who can add the least amount and who are going to be those couple that will can actually ascend up the leaderboard from their current position in the maybe T23 or wherever they might be.
Yeah, it's going to be a day of damage control. I think that's the best way that you can go about winning this tournament today. All right, don't have something disastrous. Par is a great round today, I think. Especially with the way that they'll probably set up the golf course. I get that there's been a lot of rain that'll soften up the greens, but that's where I really look at some of those guys who their strokes gained tee to green. And if you're looking for like a long shot here, I don't think Rahm or Morikawa are bad options here. You can get them odds-wise 25 and 35 to 1, and those are guys who have done this before. I get it's been a while for Colin, but John Rahm, he's not too far removed from winning a major. And John Rahm, the rebound that he had at the PGA, albeit it ended very bizarre with how he finished down the stretch. But, Casey, you brought up the quotes that he had a little bit earlier from yesterday about his frustrations. It was almost like a little bit of a double take when you heard him after the round with Amanda Baliones on the PGAs about how, and he imploded down the stretch. What was he? He was probably like six over his final four holes or something like that.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I was having fun out there. I was like, really? You were the one having fun out there? Of all the people in the field, we know like how the tempers can flare. And the way that you had a chance to win this thing, you were tied for the lead with Scotty down the stretch, and you let it all slip through your hands, but you were having fun out there. I do think it's gotten better with Rahm, certainly over the past couple of years, in terms of the mindset and the temper control. But today could be one of those things where everyone else goes over par and John Rahm goes two under today, and all of a sudden he is right back in this thing and maybe is even in the final group heading into tomorrow.
And look, him winning a Masters really stood out to me from the standpoint of kind of slaying some of these demons that we're talking about. Because if there's any course that these guys play on a year in and year out basis that requires the patience, the mental stamina, it is Augusta. And the fact that he was able to emerge victorious there, I think said a lot about his ability to kind of mature a little bit and control his emotions a little more. So we'll see if he's able to do that this weekend as well. Tyler, you mentioned Morikawa. They just showed something on the USA coverage that's going on now on the TV and here about the biggest moves in round threes in recent U.S. Opens. And I had honestly forgotten about this, but last year at Pinehurst, he was four over going into the third round, and he shot four under the best round of the day and vaulted himself into contention. Ended up shooting two over on the final day and finished tied for 14th. But you only have to look back to last year to see an instance of him making a huge move on U.S. Open Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I'll ask the two of you. I know Tyler and I, we are big fans of Victor Hovland.
Yeah.
Where do you think he goes today, up or down? Because when you look at this guy, I mean, to I think somebody's point earlier about the putting, he's 106th in putting.
Yeah.
But off the tee, he's 9th. Strokes gained approach, he's 12th. Strokes gained, short game, 4th. But, man, his putter. So, does he figure it out?
Tee to green, he's number one right now.
100%. So, where do you think he goes?
It's so interesting because, you know, he's been so good around the greens, and that's not the strength of his game. I mean, I think he's literally been quoted before as saying that his chipping sucks, is what he said after a round one time. So, that's always a huge variable for him. But he's obviously got it figured out this weekend, and you know, he's always just been such a fascinating player from the standpoint of the end of the 2023 season. He wins the BMW Championship right here at Olympia Fields, you know, was one of, if not the best golfer in the world at that time. But it kind of wasn't up to his own standard. And he spent that offseason basically retooling his swing. And he hasn't been able to quite find that peak that he had before. So, you know. But obviously, he's got it put together so far this weekend. So, I don't know. I'll be pulling for him. I always enjoy him. I think he always has a great attitude. I saw a quote from him, you know, similar question. That was the one posed to Rahm about, you know, hey, what's it been like to play this course? What's your mindset like? And he used the word fun. He said it's fun out there to take on these conditions and to play these types of holes that we don't normally play. So, you know, I think he's definitely in the right headspace heading into the weekend, if nothing else.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, Casey brought up the BMW from a couple of years ago locally, and I think both you and I, we came out of that tournament saying, yep, that's our Masters pick for next year. And he has not been that guy. And he was tremendous in that Ryder Cup, too. Him alongside Ludvig Åberg. I mean, they ate up the competition, and including Scottie Scheffler, when Scottie was kind of at its peak then.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know. If I'm being totally honest, I don't know where Victor goes. I just know there's going to be a large number next to his name comparatively. I just don't know if there's going to be a plus or minus next to it, because I don't think we're getting a steady, like, even round or one over or one. No, I think we're looking at like a five next to his name. It's just a matter of whether or not there's a plus or a minus. I think he has the highest variance for today because he's been so good tee to green. But his putting has not been good. His driving accuracy has not been good. And if we're going to play out the numbers here, and that's usually how these things go, where over the course of time, things even themselves out, I guess some of that catches up to him. So if you ask me about how I feel about Victor, and it pains me to say it, because he's probably one of my three favorite guys on tour to watch, I'd guess he probably goes south in a bad way more so than north.
Very interesting. I just think he might benefit from having the greens maybe slowed down a little bit with this moisture if they get
enough of
it. But to your point, otherwise, I could see him, you know, just fading away otherwise, and having just, you know, a typical type Victor event, you know, where he has a couple of good rounds and then just a couple of poor rounds and then just finishes deep, deep, deep down in the money.
Yeah. You almost wonder if he's kind of cut from the same cloth as like a Tommy Fleetwood. And I get that Victor's won way more on the PGA Tour and at a higher caliber, but I'm talking about majors where we see so many times Tommy's like right in the thick of things and then he'll fade or he's way out of it and then all of a sudden he has a monster Sunday and he finishes inside the top 10. It is pretty wild the way that these things can change all over the course of just a couple of holes in or around. So, all right, when we come back, we'll update you on the leaderboard, some other stories going on around the U.S. Open. We'll talk to PJ Clark from the Fried Egg. He's got an interesting story to share because he not only walked the course for a practice round, he caddied for a tour pro during a practice round. So we'll be joined by him at 10 o'clock. Looking forward to that. This segment's been brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Brought to you by Geneva National, Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, and Casey Richards with you today on this moving day here at the U.S. Open out at Oakmont. Let's get you a little bit of a leaderboard update. Nothing's obviously changed at the top. They have yet to tee off. Everything a little bit delayed today, too, as well, because of the weather having to finish up yesterday's round as well. But Sam Burns, your leader at 3-under. J.J. Spaun, 2-under. Victor Hovland, 1-under. Then you got Adam Scott, Ben Griffin as at even, who are both tied for 4th right now. Some other notables, Brooks Koepka. We haven't talked about Brooks at all. He was great on Thursday, fell back a little bit yesterday, but he's currently tied for 8th right now. You've got Tyrrell Hatton tied for 12th, as is Keegan Bradley. John Rahm, Colin Morikawa, Scottie Scheffler, all tied for 23rd right now at 4-over. Jordan Spieth at 5-over, tied for 36th. Rory McIlroy and Xander Schauffele just teed off. They're both even through 1. They're 6-over for the tournament, tied for 45th. And those are a lot of your notable names. Again, some of the miscuts. Ludvig Åberg is not going to see the weekend. Neither is Bryson DeChambeau, who really fell apart yesterday. A 7-over round yesterday. And Casey and I were talking about this during the break. Phil Mickelson was in a cluster. It looked like he was going to be like top 20-ish. heading into the weekend, but he goes four over his last four, a pair of doubles, and ends up missing the cut in what could be his final U.S. Open, Mike.
Yeah, sad to see the era maybe coming to an end, although I still think the USGA will give him an exemption or two between now and when he's finally done. But I was really pulling for Phil. I was rooting for, you know, Father Time to let him in. But I just think that these courses appeal more to the younger generation now more than ever. It used to be, you know, that knowledge and how to shape shots and whatnot. But these young guys hit it so far. And it was interesting. My nephews and godson went out to the Open this week, and they told me they just could not believe the conditions that these people have to play under. And he said the rough tired them out walking in it as a fan. So you know the rough is deep then. So you're going to get some unusual events, and you're going to have unusual scores, and you're just going to have just a lot of things we just don't normally see week to week in the PGA Tour, but we're going to see this weekend. And I think that's just what makes this week so special, is that we get to see golf from a totally different perspective, but it's only once a year.
To that point, Mike, I saw something today that, given the level of rain that hit Oakmont, the USGA was actually offering refunds to anybody who had a ticket today if they decided, hey, you know, obviously they have the course itself in great condition, but I'm sure there are going to be a lot of wet and muddy areas, you know, kind of off the beaten path a little bit. And so, yeah, I think they're giving people the option that if they think it's going to be a little too arduous for them out there traversing that rough, you know, while it's wet, while it's muddy, that, hey, you can get your money back. So I thought that was a nice move by the USGA to, you know, recognize the circumstances and give people the option to stay home if they chose so.
Yeah, they've got the weather watch on a lot of the video boards as well. Mike, I want to get some of your thoughts on that as well, as someone who's been a tournament director. And we'll go through some of the other storylines as the moving day continues. The segment brought to you by Geneva National, the CDGA Golf Show. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenn.